talk to me nice or shut up. Hashtag respect. Hashtag WB. Hashtag I'm strapped in. Hashtag game time.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. Today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by MyBookie. Sign up now and get your deposit matched with up to 50% bonus by using the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. My name is Josh Lloyd and I'm the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster, and you can find me as always on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. Go and follow Basketball Monster at BaskMonster. And of course, check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network by following our Twitter account at LockedOnNBANet. Well, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today, actually. We're going to break down the 8 games from Wednesday. We're going to preview the 5 games for Thursday. We're going to shine the player spotlight on Stanley Johnson of the Detroit Pistons. We're going to talk about the trade news, the buyout news across the NBA, injury news. So much stuff for us to get to. So
let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael Bolton. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. And of course, it goes to CJ McCollum of the Portland Trailblazers. 50 points for CJ, which included 28 in the first quarter, 6 triples, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. He had a steal. He was 18 of 25 from the field, and he hit all 8 of his free throws. An absolute monster from CJ. He has been excellent this season. He has only scored in single digits once all year, which is obviously a great result. He's the 42nd ranked player, which is down from where he was last season, despite the fact that he is playing an extra minute because his efficiency has dropped. He was a 48% shooter last year. He's only at 45.5% this year, despite the fact that his three-point percentage has climbed to 43%. So his twos are well down. But over the last month, he's seen those numbers rise. He's back to the 25th ranked player in that time, shooting 48% from the field. So some of those early season shooting woes seem to have been pushed into the past a little. Of course, his numbers over the last month are helped by the fact that he's knocking down 47% of his threes in that time. His assist numbers have been a little bit lower this season also, but one positive in terms of what he's done is he's got his steal numbers up. He was at 0.9 last year, he's at 1.1, and it might not seem like much, but that's a pretty significant change there. And one thing that was one of the weirder things, I guess, from last year was CJ McCollum's block numbers, where he's at 0.6, which was completely out of nowhere. He has gone back down to sort of career-based numbers at 0.3 this year, showing that weird block season that he had was somewhat of an outlier. I said he is the 42nd ranked player at the moment. I think we should feel fairly comfortable that he's going to remain a top 50 guy this year. He could very easily be a top 35 guy from here on out. It all depends on how that field goal percentage sticks, because he's never going to become a high rebounder or a 6 assists a game guy while the team is constructed as they currently are with Lillard around. He's just not going to be that sort of a guy, or a guy who nabs you two steals a game. He's pretty solidly in that 45 to 25 sort of a zone. And I think that's where we realistically expect him to stay, unless things happen with this team, or he gets moved, or Lillard gets moved, which is really, really unlikely. And he's running things full-time as a point guard, might enable him to be a little bit more gambly on defense and also get those assist numbers up to a 5.5-6 per game, which is a possibility that he could do. But of course, it would require him moving to a different team, or Lillard suffering some sort of long-term injury that enables McCollum to run that point guard spot exclusively. Although they do have Shabazz Napier, so they might just move Napier into that spot and make McCollum play as the backup and as the starting shooting guard, as he has been doing, which is probably a more realistic expectation. So maybe the only hope of him doing that is moving to another team. I'm going to tell you now about today's great sponsor, and it's the guys over at MyBookie. As you're all aware, the big game, the Super Bowl, is here, and it's time to cash in big and bet that game at mybookie.ag. If you haven't checked those guys out, it's the perfect weekend to try and get into the action. If you have got a hunch on who's going to win the coin toss or what color Gatorade the winning coach will be wearing, you can go and check out that, along with all the other player props and, of course, the standard totals, lines, straight-up betting that they offer at mybookie.ag. Don't just watch the game. Lay down some money and be a part of it. You can join me and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. MyBookie is the industry-leading online sportsbook, and its players enjoy the fastest payouts in the business when they win. make sure that you head over there. And because at some other sites, from what I've been told, they can be a little bit dodgy in terms of paying out. You don't have any of those risks with MyBookie. If you win, they pay out. No hassles at all. Every option you can think of. Live in-game betting as well. So go ahead and score your free cash to place your Super Bowl wager on the house. If you go to MyBookie, they give away up to $1,000 to every new player. Sign up today to score an instant 50% bonus on your first deposit. So that's right. If you join with $100, you'll get $150 bankroll to play with. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate that offer. You can play, win, and get paid at mybookie.ag. The waiver wire line of the night is also the young gun of the night, and it's Wayne Seldon Jr. of the Memphis Grizzlies. Seldon was dealing with a similar quadricep injury that's kept Kawhi Leonard sidelined for the majority of this year for him to start the year. And when he came back, he was a tad rusty, I think that's fair to say. But in the last two games, he has really cranked it up. In today's game, he had 24-4-2 with 6 triples, 2 steals and a block, 8 of 14 from the field and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. 31 minutes in today's game, 31 minutes in the last game a couple of days ago where he had 17, 2, and 6, and they both came on really efficient shooting nights. But before we get really excited, really start pumping it up, the two previous games to that, Seldon started and played 27 and 30 minutes, and he combined for 8 points. He combined for 5 assists in those two games. So which one is it? Which one is the more realistic Wayne Seldon? Is it the one who goes for 24-4-2, or is it one that goes for 4-3-3 in 30 minutes on only 6 shot attempts? It's really hard to get a full guide of that. Now, you can say, well, Josh, Tyreke Evans wasn't playing today. That's fine. But Evans was injured in some of these previous games, and Seldon still didn't really step up and do what was necessary for him to put together those big numbers. So it's not a fait accompli that he is going to be this guy when Evans is gone. And that's part of the other news, which we'll talk about as well, is that Tyreke Evans won't play for the Grizzlies until the trade deadline as they look to move him. Now, this doesn't mean 100% that a trade is happening or that he is definitely getting traded. It's saying that he won't play for this team until the trade deadline passes. If he remains on the Grizzlies, then he will come back and play. If he doesn't, then he's on another team, obviously, and things will change. Now, he could go to any different situations. There's a bunch of teams, probably 5 or 6 teams, that are looking into his value for them, for Evans, and we'll talk about that a bit later. But when we look at guys like Seldon, we know that we've got this action here up until the All-Star break where Evans isn't around. But it's not a guarantee. It's close to a guarantee, but it's not a guarantee that Evans won't then come back after the All-Star break. The other thing we have to remember is in today's game, there was no Jim Ennis, there was no Chandler Parsons, Kobe Simmons was still with the G League, and Mario Chalmers was still out. So these are 4 players who are playing at that point guard, shooting guard, small forward position who are going to come back and most likely have some sort of input into the rotation, meaning does Seldon get 31 minutes every night from here on out? There's still Andy Harrison there who's playing some minutes, plus those other guys that I've mentioned, Mike Henry, the other two-way guy who's been playing decently well on the wing too. So you know, when you're factoring all that in, yeah, look, Seldon will probably play over Kobe Simmons, but will he play over Chalmers? Will he play over Harrison, Parsons, Ennis? When all these guys get healthy, will he be able to maintain 31 minutes a night? That's probably pushing it a little bit too far at this point to think that he's going to be stuck at that role. And again, the last two games have been great from Seldon. The two previous to that weren't good. So again, which one is the real one? Now, in saying all of this, absolutely nothing wrong with going and grabbing Wayne Seldon and taking a flyer on him. I would take a flyer on him over Andy Harrison. I would take it on him over, say, even Dylan Brooks. I think he's got more potential than what Dylan Brooks has for this team. But it's far from a 100% guarantee that he's going to be able to maintain a 30-minute role because, yes, Tyreke's not there, but there are 4 other guys who could potentially be in the rotation who didn't play in this game, who we do have to factor in. It's as simple as that. We do have to factor that part in when those guys do eventually return and how that looks for all these guys on the Grizzlies. It's a continual mess when we look at this team and try and figure out their overall fantasy value. It's really tough, especially, you know, we got 6-7 guys out each game. You know, how does this all work out? I've grabbed him in the 30 deep league. I did that about 3 weeks ago. I would be, if you've got an open roster spot in a 12 team league, I have no problem with you going and doing it. But the last two games, 55% shooting, unrealistic. The two previous, 11 and 33, probably unrealistic as well. But we have to factor all these parts in and work out that there are other guys coming back, and some of this most recent performance is a little bit unrealistic for us to expect that to continue. So bear that in mind when you're considering who you're dropping, when you're going to add a guy like Wayne Seldon. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Timmy Hardaway, wasn't a good night from Tim. 4 points, one rebound and one assist with 1 of 10 from the field. This is hearkening back to the way that he began the season. Has struggled a little bit since returning from that leg injury. Nothing too major in the last 6 games. He's the 108th ranked player, so that's nothing, that's not terrible. Since he returned, he's 77th, which is not far off the 74th that he is. Over the course of the season, he is a clear must-own player. He will get better. His minutes will go up, and I don't think there's too much to worry about. This was a back-to-back, and he played 25 minutes here, 28 in today's, 25 minutes yesterday, 28 minutes in today's game. So that's great news that he played in the back-to-back. It was just a really poor shooting night from Tim, and I don't think we have too much to worry about. Just, he qualifies for the dud of the night, and, bad luck to him. But he will be better than that as we move forward, as I'm sure we're all well aware. Time for the question of the day, and it comes from our Twitter user at OozeFungus, whose name is Kevin Daniels. And he says, I want questions about the beard products and the trimming techniques that you use. How often do you trim, and everything that you do with beard maintenance? And this ties into a question that someone sent me the other day. Why did you start growing your beard? And I think I just wanted to answer this because people ask it all the time. I started growing because I was lazy. I just couldn't be bothered shaving because I am a decently hirsute man. I have hair. My arms are super hairy. My legs are super hairy. My beard grows back quickly. So I have to shave every day, and it just pissed me off. I thought it looked all right growing with the stubble there. But in the end, I just started growing it out and thought, well, why not? I can't be bothered shaving it. I can't be bothered doing anything with it. So when it comes to maintenance, I don't do anything. Actually, that's not true. I do have a beard shampoo that I only purchased recently. I never used to have one, just used regular wash. I've got a beard shampoo that I do on it once a week. And I have a beard oil that I put in there every day. But that's mainly so that the skin underneath the beard doesn't get really dry and flaky, because that is a problem. The skin can get really flaky under there. It keeps the hair fairly smooth as well. So basically, I put a beard oil on there. I wash it once a week with this beard shampoo. And I don't trim it. When I go to get my hair cut, my hairdresser cuts my hair. He does my beard, and that's it. That's the simple maintenance to it. And I got away with it for about 5 years without even using any beard shampoo or any beard oil. Just let it grow as it was, and then every 4 weeks, let's trim it up. And that was basically everything that was associated with it. So that's why I answered that one, Kevin, because everyone asked me about the beard. Why did you do it? How long have you had it for? It's been about 7 years, I think, now that I've had it. And I do constantly have thoughts of should I shave it off? How's it going to look? I'm going to look pretty stupid with it. Do I just cut it down to really stubbly? But in the end, I always sort of just go, I'll just keep it as it is. I don't want to get back into the routine of having to shave every day. That would be a fairly sizable pain in the ass, I would imagine. And for you people who do shave every day, I feel sorry for you, because it is not a fun part of male facial hair, and I'm sure the ladies can attest to the perils of continually shaving. It is not ideal. Let's get into these games, and let's start talking about them. The first game we're going to talk about, the Lakers and the Orlando Magic. Still no Lonzo Ball. Just a deplorable performance from the Lakers. In fact, Jordy Clarkson had another one of his high usage games, 33%, but did it efficiently. 20 points in 24 minutes with 5 rebounds, a steal, a block, and 2 triples. When Lonzo is back, his role is going to disappear, but we don't know when Lonzo's coming back. I'd have to assume it's pretty soon, but I don't know that for sure. Clarko has that short-term value. Julius Randle, 27 minutes, 20-9. Strong game from him. While Brook Lopez, only 9 minutes. He was definitely pissed off here. I guess a buyout could be on the cards because he just desperately wants to get out of this team and he doesn't want to be around. I just don't see him going to a team and playing 28 minutes a night and becoming the stud that we all remember from his time in Brooklyn. Maybe he can get back to 20, 24, 25 a night, perhaps, but I'm not stashing him on that hope. That's going to happen. He's definitely, in my opinion, not getting traded. I could see a buyout happening just because they don't want to trade him to take back salary that lasts past this season, and who else is, you know, trading for him. And it'd just be a weird move if you're considering it just a rental scenario for 1 year for Brook Lopez. I don't see him being a 10 team or 12 team league guy again this year. Could move into a role if he is bought out, which I think he might be trying to get worked out at the moment. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, 28 minutes, 11 and 4. These are the concerns that I had with him when we talked in the preseason. It's cropping up more and more now. Not a guy to drop, but a guy to 100% monitor to see how this continues to play out. While Brandon Ingram, 13, 5 and 5, just shot poorly, but overall an okay line. And Larry Nance, he brought the defense, had the two steals, 8 points in 25 minutes. All three of those guys, Kuzma, Randall, and Nance, are standard league guys. I think Randall's probably the priority over Kuzma, and then Nance is the third one, but it really just depends on what you need for your team. For the Magic, Azza Gordon was out, and Frank Vogel decided to start Mo Spates so he could match up with the big front court of the Lakers. Now, Julius Randall's a lot of things, but I've never heard anyone, you know, say that he is this huge power forward. That's not... I don't get that. I don't understand. Like, how tall is he? 6'9"? Like, he's not that tall. He's not that big of a guy. And Mo Spates was getting killed early on. Now, Spates did have 21 points on 11 shots. He did it offensively, but Randall was really ripping him apart defensively. And I reckon Mario Hezonja would have done a better job than Spates starting in that position. It was a weird lineup change for the sake of matching up. And then in the end, the Magic got the victory, but yeah, Spates was getting torched early on. I think in the next game, if Gordon is out, we will get Hezonja back there. He played 25, had 14, 4, and 3 with 4 triples. He's looked really, really good this year. You know, terrible his first 3 seasons, but has looked really strong this year in a surprise to many, I guess. Not really pushing for a 12-team league berth, just given the playing time and the role. But in these situations, when Gordon is out, he absolutely has that value. This was such a spanking that Evan Fournier played only 27, Alfred Payton played only 24. They were both really good, 15, 7, and 6 with 4 steals for Payton and 19 with 5 triples for Fournier. Augustine was good off the bench, Shelvin Mack pretty solid as well as they spread those minutes around, while Bismack Biyombo 5 and 6 in 31. And as soon as Vucevic is ready to come back, you can move on from Biyombo pretty comfortably because he's just not that good. The next game we look at, the Memphis Grizzlies and the Indiana Pacers. Marc Gasol, 23, 9, and 6 with 3 triples in 36 minutes. I would be stunned if Gasol is traded by the Grizzlies. I just don't think that's going to happen. Many people think that will be the case and they're worried about him in fantasy. I don't. They're also worried about a shutdown. Remember, Marc Gasol got benched for a fourth quarter, bitched, pissed, and moaned about it. The coach was fired the next day. I don't think the Grizzlies are just going to say, Mark, can you sit down for the next 2 months now? I really don't think that's even close to being anywhere on the cards if they want to keep him happy at all. But maybe they don't. Maybe they want to piss him off so he requests it. I don't know. I don't see that happening. We'll see. Dylan Brooks played 40 minutes, a decent line from him, 12, 5, and 2 with 4 steals in 32 minutes, but we've seen him play large minutes through big portions of this season and do really nothing with the majority of the time. There could be some extra usage go towards him when Tyreek goes, and depending on, again, what comes back, but he is more of that 14 to 16 team league guy. Jarrell Martin started again with Jermichael Green out, 7 and 4, wasn't his best performance. Again, more of a 14 to 16 team leaguer. And we had Deontay Davis out of this one also. So Brandon Wright got some minutes, 5 points in 14 minutes for him. Andy Harrison, 13, 5 and 6 in 25 minutes. Sorry, more of a guy we're looking at it this 14 to 16, like most of these guys, 14 to 16 team range. Onto the Pacers, Bojan Bogdanovic had been poor recently, but a nice bounce back, 21 and 5 with 3 triples. We are only using him as a streamer, while Daz Collison really solidifying what he can do, 16, 3 and 4 with 3 steals. This team, the Pacers, accumulated 16 steals. That is quite an incredible amount. They had 7 guys get at least 2 steals. Only 3 players that played didn't get a steal. Mighty Joe Young, who played 4 minutes, TJ Leaf, who played 5 minutes, and Lance Stevenson, who played 15. Everyone else got 2 steals, at least, with some of them getting 3. Miles Turner started 15 and 11, 2 steals, Three blocks, one triple. This is what we invested in. This is the sort of player we hoped that he could become. He played 33 minutes and he looks much, much better. The free throws weren't ideal, but he got to the line 12 times, which is fantastic. And hopefully this means we can have a top 30 rest of season for Miles Turner. With him starting and playing 33, Domantas Sabonis went back to the bench and played only 21 minutes. 10-7 with two steals, which is still all right. But if you're only playing 21 a night, I'd probably think then he becomes your worst player, and freeing him up to grab one of these Wayne Seldens, to grab Jarrett Allen in Brooklyn, to grab Greg Monro, to grab Alex Len, however you want to look at it, that might be a better option than holding onto a Sabonis. Oladipo wasn't his greatest performance, 13-3-5 with two steals, while Corey Joseph, of course, he had two steals as well, as everyone did on this team. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets. Benny Simmons, 24-2-7, huge from him. Joel Embiid, 29-14 with a block, huge from him. JJ Redick returned, 20 points with 3 triples, huge from him. Just the rest of the team just sucked. Actually, that's not true, because Dario Saric was good too, 12-6-4 with 3 steals in 33, but everyone else was horrendous. Jared Bayless was a DNP CD. Timotei Luwawu-Cabarro had an 11 trillion as he moved back to the bench. Trevor Booker had 6 points in his revenge game. Amir Johnson had 7 points in 12 minutes. Rashawn Holmes didn't play. Justin Anderson had 2 points in 18 minutes. But I think what's more of note with Anderson's line there is the fact that he still played 18 minutes with Redick back. It was Luwawu-Cabarro who went from 30 down to 11, and Anderson's minutes stayed solid, and Bayless didn't get in. So Anderson's an interesting, deeper league guy, and you've heard me extol his virtues, you know, quite regularly on this podcast, as I do like him as a player and a fantasy guy. In Brooklyn, Kenny Atkinson said he's going to be running with a Jarrett Allen, Jahlil Okafor as these two main centers, which is great news for, I guess, for that team, for the fans, for fantasy owners as well. Allen played 26 minutes, had 16-12, 2 blocks and 3 assists. I think he should be owned everywhere. He won't play 26 a night. Every night he won't be this productive, but he is the best center on this team. I've been saying it all year. He's the best prospect for the future, and this is great. I don't think he's going to get 32 a night, but 25 to 26 is realistic, and he needs to be owned everywhere. Damari Carroll had 15 with 5 assists, a strong game, but I think everyone wants to know about D'Angelo Russell, who played only 17 minutes, but had 22-5-3 with a steal and a block. And like Tim Hardaway, this was a back-to-back for the Nets. I didn't think that Russell would play, but the fact that he played in a back-to-back, yes, only 17 minutes, but he played. He put up a ton of looks. He had a 52% usage, which is, of course, out of control. But playing and being out there and being effective is good. He needs to be owned in every league pretty comfortably. Now, with him only playing those limited minutes, Spencer Dinwiddie got 34 of them, had 27-2-4, and a really strong performance from Dinwiddie. But if Russell's getting 24 in the next game, I'm going to be really interested to see what happens to Spencer. They did play together in this one, but again, we didn't have Rondé, we didn't have Caris LeVert, which could really muck things up there for Dinwiddie. For now, you're holding in most cases, pretty much all cases, but the arrow could start to point downwards, I think. As for Okafor, in his revenge game, played 14 minutes, had 3 fouls in the first 3 minutes, 8 points and 3 rebounds. I'm not owning him in 10s, I'm not owning him in 12s, I'm barely owning him in 14s, probably 16 teamers is the zone for him as the backup behind Jarrett Allen. The next game we'll look at, the Charlotte Hornets and the Atlanta Hawks. Kemba just crushing it. I think he's going to be the replacement all-star for Kevin Love. 38 points, 9 triples and 6 assists. He is on a massive, massive tear at the moment, while Dwight Howard, similarly on a tear, 20-12, got himself a tribute video from the Hawks. I think tribute videos are stupid in the first place, but to give them for a guy that was there for one season that the team wanted to get rid of because everyone hated him is absolute nonsense. It's nonsense. The fuss over tribute videos over the last 3 years has become insufferable to hear about, and this takes the cake. My mate Nick Batum had almost a fat face Ray Felton triple-double, 10, 11, and 10 with 2 steals. He's been really playing much better lately, and I've said it all along, he is a guy that you needed to own and you should continue owning. Of course, the way that he has rebounded from this elbow injury has meant that Jeremy Lamb is being short-shrifted. 10 points in 19 minutes for Lamb. I found out today that a lot of people still own Jeremy Lamb in 12-team leagues, and you really shouldn't. You shouldn't have been owning him for about the last 2 months, in my opinion. He can go in pretty much all cases. No Marvin Williams, so Frank the Tank started. 11-3, basically Kaminsky's only ever been a good fantasy player when he gets to start at center. He can't really do anything in these other roles, and it is a little bit disappointing. Trevion Graham got a boost as well, had 14 points in 26 minutes, and his three-point shooting is one of the more surprising things that we've seen. I think he's like a 60% shooter last year, and he's at 46% this season, and he was like a 32% guy in college. Just some crazy, crazy development over these 2 years for him in the NBA. Onto the Hawks. Well, they made a change to their starting lineup at halftime. Miles Plumlee came out at center, and Mike Muscala started. So still no Undertaker, still no Baptist. Collins and Dedmon, it is 100% clear to literally everybody who watches this team that they're the best front court option they've got. Dedmon had 9, 5, and 2. Collins had 12 and 3, but only played 23 and 21 minutes respectively. Shot the ball very well. I'm still holding Collins. You're a week away from the trade deadline. The Undertaker, I'm not so bullish on holding. I'm definitely more in the Baptist camp at this point to see what happens with Ilyasova, to see what happens with Muscala, Plumlee, Dedmon, any of those guys. Any or all of them could be on the move. Bellinelli had 22 and his 25, but he's likely out the door as well. Well, Kent Bazemore, 25 with 5 assists, 73% shooting, a strong game from him. Played a little bit of point guard as well because Dennis Schroeder was dealing with a sore shoulder. 13-2-9 for Schroeder. Could miss some time, and that would give a temporary bump to Malcolm Delaney and maybe a guy like Isaiah Taylor as well. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, man. I said it when I did the player spotlight on him the other day. I don't think that he's going to be a very good player. I don't think that he is going to be a starter on a very good team or even a playoff-based team, but he had the opportunity to put up some fantasy numbers and started to look okay at the end of last season. He looks terrible at the moment. 0 points in 25 minutes, a rebound, an assist, and a steal. And while I was saying, yeah, hold, the minutes are still there, the minutes aren't there anymore. He looks bad on the court. He looks disinterested. I think you drop him. You want to drop him for Jarrett Allen? Fine. You want to drop him for Wayne Seldon? Fine. I think you have to consider moving on from him in a lot of these cases. He just doesn't look good on the court, and the minutes are being distributed accordingly because he has he's been decently sucking. If you're in a very deep league, look if Tyler Dorse is available. I like what I'm seeing from Dorse. 7 points in 17 minutes. Really starting to look good, and I think Hawks fans would also agree that he's starting to look solid. Interesting when DeAndre Bembry comes back, whether he takes Dorsey's role or what happens there. But that could also open up if a Bellinelli trade comes down. The next game, the Miami Heat and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Joshy Richardson, 15-3-2, another two blocks. He is really good. The Iron Shoulder had 18-3-6, while Hassan Whiteside only 24 minutes. Again, the minutes thing is a bother. 9-8 in that time. He'll have good games, he'll have some bad games. You have to hold him, but this is going to be a consistent problem. Olynyk had 10-7 with 3 steals, while Adebayo had 9-5 in 19 minutes. And part of the reason that he plays, you know, fewer minutes is because he's got two other guys, Spoelstra does, in Olynyk and Adebayo, who play the position really well and can play it in a more modern sense. Jim Johnson struggled, 8-4 with a steal and a block. You're in a 10-team league, I reckon you can move on from Jim. I'd still hold in 12s, but in a 10, I reckon you move on. While Tyler Johnson played a couple of extra minutes, had 11-6 with 2 steals, and I still think he is a hold. While the Duke really struggled, missed all 4 of his shots, only had the 6 boards and went scoreless in 26. But again, still fine to own, provided you need 3-pointers. That's realistically what he is giving you. Onto the Cavs, another big game from Channing Frye. Only 21 minutes, but had 16 points with 2 threes and a steal and a block. I think him getting 16 points in 20 minutes a game is probably not something we can rely upon, but this is sort of what I thought would happen with Kevin Love out. You got a boost to Jay Crowder in minutes. You got a little bit to Thompson, who played 23. You got a little bit to Frye. You get a little bit to Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
And no one is a clear must-own guy. If there's anyone I'm adding, it's probably Frye if I'm looking to stream threes and some points. I'm not adding Crowder in 12. I'm definitely not adding Tristan Thompson. I'm not adding Jeff Green. Maybe it's Frye, but no one is a 100% must-own. Look at this huge benefit that this guy is getting from Kevin Love's absence. Dwayne Wade had 9-5 with a steal and 2 blocks, and Ty Lue said he was going to increase Derrick Rose's minutes with the Love injury. Well, I guess he's right because he played him 0 minutes in the last game and played him 5 here. Rose had 1 point and continues to be quite, quite bad. Isaiah Thomas, 30 minutes, 13-5-6 with 4 steals. Absolutely killed your field goal percentage, took just so many shots, and that's going to be a continual theme without Love now. He's going to just take way more shots. He doesn't look right at all. I can't believe that he didn't have that hip surgery. It has to be still bothering him. I cannot see how that hip is still not bothering him. He does not look the same at all, and do not expect him to get back to top 20 value. I wouldn't be. The next game, the New York Knicks and the Boston Celtics, another huge Enes Kanter game, 17-17 with a block on 70%. He has been an absolute animal and a real draft day steal this year, while Porzingis.
Porzingis.
It's good to see him at least scoring a point against Boston, 16-4 with three blocks. Not his best night, but far from his worst against this team. Courtney Lee had 7 in 29. I don't think that Lee is a must-hold standard league guy. Mick Beasley, only the 12 points, had some foul trouble, had a 54% usage, so that is really really what Supercool Bees does. And the point guards, I don't know what to make of this. Trey Burke had 5 minutes in this one after playing 28-16 and limiting Frank Ntilikina. Only 5 here to Burkey. Jarrett Jack played 20, and that's 3 games in a row of around 20-21 minutes for Jackie, while Ntilikina played the most minutes, 22, and had 5, 1, and 3. There's nothing to see there in 12-team leagues, and probably not much in 14-team leagues, considering it feels like the minutes are going to go up and down all over the place. Cock only played the 8 minutes, while Bill Hernangómez also played 8. I am not really all that excited about Hernangómez as a guy to own now, as a stash. In a 14-team league, maybe I would do it. I wouldn't be doing it in a 12, especially when you can grab a guy like a Jarrett Allen, or you can grab one of these other players who could have more value rather than the third-string center for the Knicks. For the Celtics, no Kyrie Irving, no Marcus Smart, so Terry Rozier started, and as I always say, you know what I say about Rozier? When he gets the minutes, he produces. It was his first NBA start. He played 33 minutes. He had a triple-double. He had 3 threes. He had 2 steals. He had 2 blocks. He is the second player in NBA history to record a triple-double in their first start. The first player to do it is Locked On / Red Rock podcast favorite, Tony Roten. So he's in elite company there. That is a huge night from Rozier. Now, Irving might not play again on Friday, so Rozier is a strong short-term pickup. But once Smart comes back, he goes back to a 22-23-minute role, and that makes him a hard guy to hold. But for now, and for maybe the next 2 weeks, you can get something out of Rozier. Marcus Smart bruised his hip. He had 20 points in 19 minutes. Really efficient stuff from Smart. That's not Smart. Morris. I'm talking about Marcus Morris hurt his hip. 20-5 there in those 19. Still more of a 14 teamer. Al Horford 14-9-5. Or Vanilla Tice was good again, as was Bainesy, who played 23 minutes and had 2-6. Not a great fantasy night, but played fairly well on the court. Jason Tatum, 15 points, looked pretty good, couldn't hit his threes at a good rate, while Jaylen Brown, you'll be shocked to know he went 50% from the free throw line. The Chicago Bulls and the Portland Trailblazers, the other news coming out today regarding trades is Nikola Mirotic won't play for this team, very similar to Tyreek Evans, until the trade deadline passes, and then we'll see. Oh, I didn't mention it for the Knicks, but Joakim Noah has also been sent home until after the trade deadline. Like, that makes a difference to their rotation, because the dude didn't play anyway, but he is not going to be around, and there's a growing sentiment that he's played his last game for the Knicks, whether they just let him rot Luol Deng style with the rest of his contract on the bench. But the stories about him and Hornacek aren't ideal, and he's got no value. But as for Mirotic, he is not going to be playing for the Bulls until after the trade deadline, if a trade doesn't get done, then he'll come back to the team. Markkanen was out, Mirotic was out, so it was time for Fred Hoiberg to unleash his Paul Zipser. He started Zipser, who had 9 points, and Punchbob Shiploke came off the bench. 8 points, 10 boards for Portis in 28 minutes. Just horrendous shot jacking, as is his trademark, 27% off 15 shots. He is not good. I refuse to believe that this guy is a good NBA player. He is an absolute disaster defensively. You can tell me that Nikola Mirotic is a bad defensive player, I'll tell you you're wrong, but you can tell me that, and then I'll show you a video of Bob Portis and go, well, he's 30 times as good as what Portis is defensively. He did have a steal and a block in this game, but the inefficiency, the shot jacking, the selfishness, the way that this guy plays is incredibly frustrating. But in saying that, if Mirotic goes and another big man doesn't come back, and Portis is an interesting stash sort of guy, absolutely I would do that over, say, a Bill Hernangómez in New York behind a Jarrett Allen. But he is not an elite upside fantasy guy, I don't think, Bob Portis. I was going to say Robert Portis. That sounds very professional. Justin Holiday, 9 points on 12 shots, poor efficiency there, while the Hammer Denzel Valentine had 15-6, another strong game. The minutes were a bit down, but he is looking much better in his production, but I still don't feel that I can 100% trust it. Tell you who else didn't look ideal on the court, even though his efficiency was fine, is Zach LaVine. He's still, look, that's a good line. 23 points, 2 assists, 2 steals and a block. But I don't know. I'm just not feeling it for him to be an absolute star leader of a team. That's a good fantasy line. And of course, he must be owned and he's going to be able to put up those stat lines. But I don't know. There's just something about him that just is not screaming good NBA player at this point. And I know he's coming back from his ACL. So there's clearly reasons behind that. But I'm not convinced. McCollum went big. I told you, guards against the Bulls, man, they kill it. Lillard didn't so much because he was just saying, man, CJ, you can do everything. 13, 4, and 7 for Dame in 30 minutes, but that's not a disaster. Well, Yusuf Nurkic had to leave the game late with a left quad contusion, copped a knee from Robin Lopez. So that's going to open up some things for Eddie Davis. Only played the 19 here, Eddie, 4 and 7 with 2 blocks, while Zach Collins played 27 minutes and had 3 and 6. Davis could be a preemptive 12-team add, but I don't think that Nurkic's injury is anything like a long-term scenario. So again, we're looking at Portis, Allen, these sort of guys are well ahead of a Davis if you're looking for long-term minutes upside. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
He was shit in this one, 8-6 in 21 minutes, but he didn't need to play big minutes because this game was absolutely out of hand in the first quarter. So that's why many of these players saw their minutes limited. Only 29 for CJ, 30 for Dame. That's a big part of that. So that's why we got the extra run for a guy like Zachy Collins in 23 minutes for Shabazz Napier, who has really, really dropped off of late. The last game of the night, the Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns. A change to the Mavericks starting lineup. Dwight Powell started over Maxi Kleber. He had 7-7 in 28 minutes. We've seen Powell have some significant runs of standard league relevance. So if he's going to start and play 28 a night, he's, and if you miss out on an Allen, who I would prioritize, I think he's an interesting add just to see where this goes with him. Definitely higher upside than, say, a Maxi Kleber. We still got 33 minutes out of Yogi Ferrell, who had 13, 2, and 2. No JJ Barea in this one. Dennis Smith had 17, 4, and 6, but the efficiency was a real problem, as it's always going to be for him, it appears, this year. Wes Matthews also turded it up with the shooting, 6 points on 17 shots, but 3 assists and 5 steals and a block, I guess, resurrected his line and helped you, and he should be owned in 12-team leagues. Onto the Suns, Isaiah Cannon. Fractured his ankle. It looked horrendous. He is done for the season. That could honestly spell the end of Isaiah Cannon's career. So that is terrible news for that young guy. I don't think he's a great player, but that was a horrendous, horrendous injury. That's going to bring guys like Tyler Ulis a little bit more back into calculations. He still only played 11 minutes, though. Here, Ulis missed all 5 of his shots, as Devin Booker is going to be the starting point guard on this team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Ulis is a 18 to 16 team league addition. I'd be considering Josh Jackson for 12s. He started, he played 28, he had 28 minutes, 21 points, 8 boards, 2 steals, 1 block. He's not going to be a 64% shooter, we're all well aware of that. But if he's going to play 30 a night and he's going to be able to contribute in other areas, I think he's a 12-team league ad. I'd be adding him over a Seldon for sure. That would be the guy that I would go for. I'd also check if Marquise Chris is available. He had 15 and 12 with a triple one, 28 minutes. I don't think he's good. He is improved, but he does rack up fantasy stats, and that's important for us, clearly. Booker had 15, 2, and 4, while TJ had 24 and 4. Troy Daniels had 20 minutes off the bench, still remains a pretty strong 3-point streamer. Now, the big news, I guess, with this team, apart from the Cannon injury, is Greg Monroe.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
So Greg Monroe has been bought out by the Suns, and lots of differing opinions, and no, we don't know who's going to be right with any of this stuff or any of these comments, but I want to give you my take on this whole Monroe situation. Monroe has got multiple suitors across the NBA. He's going to have an opportunity to choose where to go. If he chooses to go to New Orleans, I think he's a comfortable top 100 guy. He is from Louisiana. They have got an absolute giant gaping hole in that front court next to Anthony Davis. Play him at center with Davis at power forward. Supplant Dante Cunningham. Give him 27 to 28 a night and you're done. Gives them more scoring punch, more offense, a guy that can play defense. Even though you think he's shit, he can play defense. He can't protect the rim, but he can play defense. He can get play in passing lanes. He's got quick hands. He can play defense. He is not a bad defender. He just isn't a good defender, and he's a terrible rim protector. But he's not a bad, bad defender. Right, so he goes to New Orleans. His value jumps up. He could go to Boston, who is currently starting Aaron Baines. and you have Vanilla Tice is in that rotation. I think he moves ahead of both of those guys and probably starts and plays 25 minutes. And in 25 minutes, yes, he can be a top 100 guy in that sort of playing time as well. He could go to, there's not many other situations that he could go to where he has, you know, significant value. But these are the opportunities, that are standing out as probably number one and two in terms of where he's going to go. So if he's on my waiver wire, I add him. Now, I've seen many other people say that now and that he's been bought out, you have to drop him. I don't get that because he wasn't playing. He was playing, he played the last four or five games because of injury, but prior to that, he just wasn't playing. So surely him going to a place where, or it could be a place where he plays 28 a night in New Orleans, could be. That's a much better situation than him when Alex Len was back, him sitting on the bench and doing nothing. So surely in that case, his value rises. He goes and plays 25 a night in Boston. It's a rise in value because he's going to play every night. So I think he's a guy to grab, personally, even though many are saying, you know, drop him now that he's been bought out. I don't get that. I think the two situations that have been brought up as opportunities for him are going to actually be potential positives for him. He's not going to go to a team like Denver and play behind Nikola Jokic 16 minutes when he could go play 28 in New Orleans. Although I think Denver would love to have him with Mason Plumlee out for a bit with that calf injury. He's not going to go to a team like Atlanta where there's a million big men where he could get lost in the shuffle where they want to tank and when there's no chance of any sort of playoff contention. He's not going to go to Philadelphia to back up Joel Embiid. Yeah, he's going Boston and New Orleans are the two places that are really standing out. And that's, look, he could go to a team where he plays 18 and on, you go, oh, that was pointless. But I think the value's there. The other prevailing thought, which I don't know why I seem to be in the minority here all the time, is that everyone's like, grab Alex Len. You have to grab Alex Len. And my retort to that is, why? That's a simple retort. But Greg Monroe was not having any impact on Alex Len's minutes at all. Because when Chandler, Len, and Monroe were healthy, Chandler would start, Len was the backup, and Monroe would not play. When Chandler was out, Monroe would start, and he'd play more minutes than Len. So, okay, on those days where Chandler sits, then you know, once, you know, maybe three more games this year, maybe Len, instead of playing 20 minutes, plays 28 in those games. But in the regular rotation scheme of things, Monroe literally was not playing. So he wasn't having any impact. And I did have a discussion with someone on Twitter today, so there is a level of confusion out there. But it eases up the three-man center rotation. There was no three-man center rotation. Exactly twice in Greg Monroe's tenure in Phoenix did he play in a game that both Len and Chandler played. One of them, I think, was the 5th of January, where he played 3 minutes. And the other one was the 24th of November, where he inexplicably started at power forward and played 12 minutes. So, for all of this time, he has not played in games with the other two centers. So, just because Monroe's out of town, that doesn't give Len, well, Len's going to get 28 minutes a night, double-double, two blocks. It doesn't change anything. Now, what does change it is if they decide to move on from Tyson Chandler, or if they decide to reduce Chandler's minutes, or to start Len. But man, they've been out of it for that long. They should have been starting Len above him. Then remember, they have no control over Alex Len for next season. He is an unrestricted free agent. They dicked him around this season. They dicked him around in the off season. He can very likely go anywhere else that he wants. They have no control or no ability to retain. If he says no, they're shit out of luck. So they are under no, I'm trying to think of the right word. No, I can't think of the word, but they've got no benefit, I guess, in developing him here. They've seen him for 5 years. This is his 5th year with this team. They know what he is about. I saw an argument, they'll just want to develop him for the last 30 games and just see what they've got, see what he can get. He's been there 5 years. They have had the opportunity to play him over Tyson Chandler for the first 55 games of this season. Yes, they shut Chandler down after the All-Star break last season. I feel decently strongly that the NBA has said to teams, don't do this again. Like, don't, you can't just sit healthy players for 2 months. And it was a horrendous look on the organization. We saw what happened with Eric Bledsoe. and how it pissed him off. And I don't think it's going to encourage free agents to want to come there if that's the attitude that you have when you're in the middle of your prime and you sit down for 2 months. I don't think that Chandler's going to... I don't think that's necessary. Look, they might reduce him from 26 a game to 20 a game and Len gets 26. That can all happen. But to me, it's got absolutely zero to do with Munro not being there anymore. There's also the correct and prevailing, not prevailing, or wisdom that I've seen out there, that they're going to want to see more of Bender at the 5 and Chris at 4, which they absolutely 100% should do. If they want to see how things work out, that is the combination, and that is they are the players you use at center, not a guy like Len and not a guy like Chandler. So Len, at best, is a top 100 guy, if everything is going his way. Persistent ankle problems his entire career, out currently with an ankle issue. Still the same rotation with Chandler ahead of him, which could change. Remember, Munro did not play. There was that weird three center, you know, where they'd sit one guy every game back in December, but that stopped a long time ago. And Munro just didn't play. So what we had seen is what we're currently seeing unless they change something with Tyson Chandler. And that is not 100%, it's a good chance of happening, but it's not 100% happening. So if you're going to look at it and go, Munro's gone, Len's out, not so much. Because Len and Chandler have been the two people playing center all season, not Munro. And that's an important differentiation to make. That Chandler reduction could very easily come, but it is by no means a guarantee, and it's got nothing to do with Munro being gone. I probably should also talk a little bit about Tyrek. I talked about him before, about what's going to happen with him in terms of his trade value, where he goes. I think almost definitely where he goes, it's going to be a reduction in his values. Now, some of the teams he brought up, Boston's one of those ones. Denver's probably the most interesting one that I heard. I think he could go to Denver and maintain maybe 75 to 80% of his value. He wouldn't do that in Boston at all. He'd be at like 50% maybe. I think if he goes to Denver, he is a significantly better player than Fart and Will Barton, and Barton could easily come back the other way. He is significantly better than Baby Neck Wilson Chandler. You'd still have Gaz Harris playing his minutes because he's very good. You'd still have the Blue Arrow doing what he does, but Manny Moutier would lose playing time, probably out of the rotation entirely, and Fart and Will Barton wouldn't be getting the minutes he's getting, and Chandler might be out as well, and you might have Barton playing exclusively as a small forward. Meaning Evans could get your backup two, your backup one, and play some three as well. So I think he would have a chance in Denver of having decent enough value where you wouldn't have to trade him out. That's the ideal scenario, I think, him going there. Going to Boston, battling Smart, Brown, Tatum, Rozier, Irving, Morris. That's not as clear cut. Denver's the one where I saw it. I went, oh, okay, yep, all right. He can maintain some value there. We don't know where he's going. There's talk of New Orleans. He goes to New Orleans with what's happening with that team. Rondo, see you later. He is gone. Drew, Etuan, Tyreek, there's your 1-2-3. Rondo's done in that case. And that's a possibility if they don't end up with Munro. And he can maintain a large chunk of value in New Orleans as well. So it's not the absolute end of the world when Tyreek gets traded. It could be in terms of his value, but it's not 100% going to be the case. He could go to a team where there is something there for him, where there is some value, but it really depends on what that team is, and it's sort of a 50-50 proposition at the moment. But that's something to pay attention to. So heaps of news. Mirotić, Tyreek, Isaiah Cannon injury, Greg Munro buyout, Joakim Noah sent home, tons of stuff going on in the NBA. If I haven't touched on something, I apologize. I know I was getting absolutely smashed on Twitter today, so I apologize if I didn't get to your questions. So many of them coming through. If you scroll through my responses, you might see an answer to a question that is similar to yours anyway, but just way too many questions coming in to get to everyone's, especially when I'm trying to work on this stuff and correct projections and stuff over on Basketball Monster as well. That's going to wrap us up for all the action from Wednesday. I'm going to take a break and then we're going to come back and we're going to look at the games for Thursday. It's a 5-game slate on Thursday. We're going to give you a song here by Big School. It's called Centennial. And then I'll be back to talk DFS for Thursday. Go! we're back, and we're going to go to the player spotlight. And this one is a shout-out to my basketball monster brethren, Kyle McEwen, who requested that I do the player spotlight on his boyfriend, Stanley Johnson. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk Stan Johnson, a guy who was the number 8 pick back in the 2015 draft. This is his third season in the NBA, and it is fair to say, sorry, Kyle, that he's been a disappointment so far in his NBA career. But we're seeing things start to turn around for Stan at the moment with a couple of decent performances in his last two games. We'll look at just those two in isolation to start things off. 29 minutes in the game against the Cavs. Well, these are both against the Cavs. And I guess we have to factor that in because the Cavs are just horrible at defending anybody. 29 minutes for Stan in that first one. 14-4-3. Two steals and a block. The next game, without Toby Harris or Avery Bradley, 40 minutes, 26-10, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 1 block. And the most important thing to me there is the 7 assists over those two games and the 4 steals. We know he's not going to maintain a 30% usage when Blake Griffin returns for the next game, but the involvement, ball handling, and passing-wise, the defensive activity, the 4 steals and 2 blocks across those two games, is interesting, and he didn't do it on crazy efficient shooting, 40% in one of those games and 48% in the other, which is clearly higher than what he's done throughout his career, but didn't hit his threes at a high rate, 17 and 25%, so just getting it done in other areas. And over the last 2 weeks, his last six games, he is almost cresting the top 150, 11.5 and 4, 0.8 threes, 2 assists, 1.2 steals and half a block on 40 and 77% shooting, and still shooting a brutal 22% from 3. So where do things go from Stan Johnson now? A lot of people are really excited based on the absences of Harris and Bradley and that performance from him in that last game, thinking he is a must-own guy. And I wouldn't say he's a must-own guy, but he's absolutely a must-look-at guy and a potential guy to go and add. But he has played 27 minutes per game this year. He has averaged 8-4, and he's the 226th ranked player. But the usage is under 15%, and I do think that that usage is going to push up and get at least close-ish to close to 20%. Not quite there, but getting closer to that area than what we've seen from Stan in the past. And that's of course going to help his overall value. But it's going to come from steals. It's going to come from assists. When we eventually work out, you know, what this guy can do. Can he be this secondary ball handler? His defense has improved. He's still got work to do on that end, and the ball handling has improved again, but still work to do there for Stan the Man Johnson. Shooting just 36% from the field is obviously, yeah, very far from impressive, and a lot of work needs to be done in that area as well for Stan. But I'm not really certain that he's ever going to be able to improve that shooting to a high enough level where he becomes an average NBA shooter, but you want him to at least be able to get to 40%. He's a fair distance away from that at the moment, but we'll see where it, we'll see where he goes. For now, he is a decent ad. Is he an ad over a guy like Wayne Seldon? No, I think I'd probably take Seldon over him, to be honest. Obviously, he's behind, yeah, Jarrett Allen and Greg Monroe, as I talked about earlier. Is he ahead of Luke Kennard on Detroit? Probably. Reggie Bullock? I'd probably take Bullock in most of those cases. But this is the third season of Stan Johnson's career, and we're starting to see him improve. But it's still not big, big steps forward. He's still a negative box score plus minus. He still has a disgusting true shooting of 47%. His PER is 8.6, which is horrendously, horrendously bad. He's improved his win shares, but still a negative 3.2 on the court. He was a positive last year, but he has regressed there. So his defense still isn't at a level that it can make up for how piss poor his offense is most of the time. But again, the last couple of games are showing us a few sparks. You're not going to be able to buy low in a dynasty based on what we saw in the last game, but we're seeing a little bit more. The guy is 21 years of age. He's played just over 4,000 minutes in the NBA, so still got room to grow, comfortably room to grow, but it's all going to hinge on whether that shooting can become something or whether he can become an elite-level playmaker. And I think both of those things are pretty unlikely. Can he have top 100 seasons in the NBA? I think he's probably a guy who could have one or two of them. Will he ever be a top 50 guy? I would be pretty staggered if that happened. Sorry, Kyle. I don't see him ever getting to that level. Could he ever be a guy that averages 20 points and 5 assists with 2 steals? I know that's Kyle's sort of ceiling for him. We have to throw in that Kyle is, of course, a Pistons fan. I don't think that he's ever that guy. I think he's more of a 13, 14 point per game guy that can top out at that sort of a level, maybe with four assists and four rebounds. But the two steals is realistic. He is trending in the right direction, but we're still a long way from that happening. For now, he is a fine guy to grab in a 12-team league. I'm not valuing him super highly in Dynasty, but next year is the real big year for Stan where he can turn it around. So I've still got a level of faith in him there that he can become better in other areas. The opportunity is clearly here for him now, with Van Gundy thinking that he's got that ability, but Stan has not been enamored with Stan throughout his career and has often put him in the doghouse, but it appears like the faith is more there now. We're seeing more from Johnson. He's averaging a three a game again, which is a big step forward from what he's done at other points in his career, and it is starting to look a lot better. And I think that we can have from here on out a comfortable top 200 finish, probably a top 150 and maybe a top 120 finish, with him targeting maybe a top 100 guy next year or the year after. But I don't think that it's necessarily going to last long term for him. So when you're valuing him in a dynasty frame, of course, I could be very easily wrong. And you know, you can listen to other people like Kyle who are much bigger on him. So if you're in a dynasty league with Kyle, try and sell Stan Johnson to him. You might be able to get some value back. But when we're looking at him in general, he's had opportunities. He's failed to grasp them. This is another opportunity. Let's see how he goes with the additional usage, with more trust placed in him, which is big as well. It's a huge, huge key, is that additional trust. And we'll see how that goes for Stan Johnson. All right, let's go to the perfect DFS lineup on FanDuel. Kemba had 48.4, big game from him, obviously. Terry Rozier had 55.2, Wayne Seldon 36.8, CJ McCollum 59, Bojan Bogdanovic 36.5, Joshy Jackson 39.6, Benny Simmons 38.9, Marcus Morris 33, and Joel Embiid 48.8 for a total of 396.2, and that cost $58,800. On DraftKings, Rozier 58.75, Seldon 39, Bogdanovic 35.75, Jared Allen 39, Joel Embiid 52, CJ McCollum 62.75, Nick Batum 45.75, and Kemba had 53.5, and that cost 386.5 for a total of $49,300. Five game Thursday up for us here. Let's look at these games for DFS and try and work out how we can get ourselves that perfect lineup. The first one is the Toronto Raptors and the Washington Wizards. The Raptors are favored by 3.5 and the total is 215 points here. CJ Miles didn't play in the last game due to his knee soreness. If he is out, Norm Powell absorbs those minutes. We might have the Jedi OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He might get some more playing time, or you've got guys like Fred VanVleet and DeLon Wright, but nothing that's really going to make them elite DFS options. At point guard, Kyle Lowry is 7,400 here for Lowry. It's been a historically not good matchup for him against Washington, but no John Wall can ease things, although Thomas Satoransky, he put the clamps on Russell Westbrook in that last game. So Lowry, I think, is worth a look, but there is a level of concern, but I'd still be okay. As for Satoransky at 4,900, it's a price rise. He looked really good in that last game. Still don't feel super comfortable about using him in cash, especially against Lowry and the Raptors. You've got DeLon Wright, you've got Freddie VanVleet, you've got Timmy Frazier at 44. If I'm going to throw any of those guys into tournaments, it's going to be VanVleet or maybe Frazier, but that's about it. Shooting guard DeRozan, 8,400. I like DeMar quite a bit here. He's done very well against Washington in the past, a 48-point average. And really worth looking at. While Bradles Beal at 85, I'd take DeMar over Beal. I know that Beal doesn't have Wall around, but he has struggled at times without John. I would be looking at that DeMar DeRozan play rather than Beal. At small forward, Oubre's at 46, has struggled recently, 16 point average, over his last three. More of an upside tournament guy, while Otto Porter played very, very well in that last game, and subsequently his salary has risen to 7,100, had 45 points against the Thunder. I have zero faith in him maintaining value with Wall out, where he has historically struggled there also. At power forward, Serge Ibaka's at 5,600. It's a price rise for Ibaka, but I do like it here for him. I think he's in a really good spot. I think it's not a bad cash option with more tournament upside, whereas I love Markieff at 57, has really upped what he's been doing, averaging 36 over the last three, usage up, minutes up. Love this spot for Morris. Siakam, Mike Scott, very little to care about. At center, Marcin Gortat's at 46. He's done well against the Raptors in the past, but it's come in large minutes, so I don't think that this is really a good spot for him, while Valanciunas at 63, just killing it at the moment. But can we trust Jonas Valanciunas' playing time? The answer to that is almost invariably no. So he's a tournament guy. Jakob Poeltl's at 41, and I'm not really interested in him, nor Jan Mahinmi. On DraftKings, DeRozan at 78 is really, really good. I'm big into DeRozan at that price. Ibaka at 49, I think, is a cash option. While Valanciunas at 56, again, crushing it, but the uncertainty with playing time makes him a tournament guy. Beal's probably too high. Porter at 66, more in consideration at DraftKings, but I'm not really interested there. Satoransky, more of a GPP guy as well. The next game up on deck for us is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Detroit Pistons. Just a lot of uncertainty with Memphis, of course. Deontay Davis, Jermichael Green, Chandler Parsons, Mario Chalmers, Jim Ennis. We have no idea on the status of those guys, whether they're going to play. We know that Tyreek is going to be out, but the presence of those guys is unknown. So there's a lot of value. And if we don't hear about it, Grizzlies can normally, or do normally put out their injury information relatively early. So we should get that information early on, but there is lots of uncertainty there. For Detroit, Blake Griffin, Bryce Johnson, and Willie Reed are all likely to make their debut in this game. Bryce and Willie probably won't play at all. We heard Stan Van Gundy say that he is going to stagger Drummond and Griffin, so we're going to see more center Blake, which opens up more minutes for Tone Tolliver, but also means we see very little of Willie Reed, Bryce Johnson, or Eric Morland, and that's probably a good thing. So it'd be interesting to see Blake at center. At point guard, Chalmers at 3,700. I'm all about that if he plays. That's a great price, especially with Tyreek gone. That's a super good price, but we just don't know at this point. Ish is at 6,200. Probably a tournament guy, but I'm not really super interested in him either. While Dwight Bikes at 38, no. Shooting guard, Luki Kennard, 39, is definitely in the tournament zone. He'll be very lowly owned after the minutes were distributed last game, but that doesn't mean that they're always going to be distributed that way, so have a look at him as a tournament guy. While Wayne Seldon at 36, feels like an absolute gimme for cash, but again, if all of those guys come back, where do the minutes go? I think it's very unlikely that Parsons and Ennis play, so I think he's going to be okay, and I think he should be a relatively strong or cash play who's going to have high ownership, and that means he's possibly a tournament fade in that case. At small forward, Dylan Brooks at 4,000, a tournament option there as well. I would take Seldon over him. Just not doesn't have as much upside explosivity as what Wayno does. I think I made those words up. Jimmy Ennis at minimum salary, I doubt he plays. Reggie Bullock at 47, that's fine for cash. I think there's tournament upside there in him as well. While Stan the Man Johnson at 5,200, dropped that 49 on the Cavs, but of course it was the Cavs. And Memphis is a much more slower paced team who could be able to reduce him somewhat. Still interested, but more interested tournament wise. Power forwards, Blakey Griffin, 8,700. I know it's a new team. I'm okay to use Blake at that price. It's a good price. He was killing it in LA with his numbers, averaging 46 over his last five. I'm all right with getting Blake back in there. While Tone Tolliver at 43, absolutely a GPP guy, especially if they decide to play Griffin at center, or if they say, well, Griffin's still not ready to go, which is really, really unlikely. But then Tolliver would just absolutely smash through his value. At center, Gasol's at 8,200, has done very well against this team in the past. I like using Gasol here. He should be able to see quite a bit of usage. While Drummond's at 10,200, that's a very, very large price. The uncertainty with how he works with Blake, plus the way the Grizzlies do restrict opposition centers, would leave him at that sort of a salary as a faded player. On DraftKings, Griffin's at 7,900, so that's really strong. Yeah, I like that quite a bit. Marc Gasol at 76. Pretty good play there also. Well, Drummo at 94 in the fade territory. We've got Reggie Bullock at 5,000. Absolutely fine, but there's way more value in other guys on DraftKings. Stan at 54, looking at more tournaments, while Luki Kennard at 4,000. Again, more just a GPP. And those Grizzlies guys, Seldon at 4,000, really like that, but there is uncertainty. While Chalmers at 45 loses a fair chunk of his appeal with that extra price that is given to him over on DraftKings. Let's go to that next game. We're going to be looking at, who are we looking at? The Milwaukee Bucks and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Injury-wise, Eric Bledsoe is doubtful with that ankle that kept him out of all but 3 minutes of the last game, so we're going to get an opportunity for Brogdon, Snell, and Sterling Brown in Bledsoe's absence. At point guard, Jeff Teague's at 5,800.
My name is Jeff.
I like that for Teague. No Bledsoe there does help opposition point guard, so I like that for Teague, who's been shit lately, but I think at 5,800 he's got the upside to push into 35-point territory. And no other point guards to really mention. Tyus Jones, Matty Dellavedova, maybe Deli, but he's at 4,500, which is just too high. Shooting guard, love Brogdon at 54 here. Going to be the starting point guard. This has got 35 written all over it. Love that. Sterling Brown at 3,500. I think that's definitely worth a look. He can rack up numbers. He's going to get minutes. I think this is a situation to use. Andy Wiggins at 6,000. Actually like Wiggins at 6,000. I know he can be horrendous at times, but that's not a bad price. While Chrissy Middleton without Bledsoe at 7,500 is also in that strong zone. Tone Snell at 4,000 just does zero for me. At small forward, Jim Butler, 8,900. Let's go. I'm in on Jim at that price tag. He's a rock solid guy pretty much every time he's out there, regardless of price though for Jim Butler. At power forward, Taj is at 5,400. I like that for cash. I think that he is rock solid at that price. Limited upside, but really rock solid for the cash value. Well, the Muppet, John Henson, at 5,500. He's getting it almost every night that he plays. Limited upside, but some pretty strong cash numbers. At center, you got Karl Anthony Towns, 9,300. If they actually give him the ball, he will smash through that in a very, very favorable matchup. I get the feeling that he will, but there is a level of concern given how badly they have been using him offensively. Thon McCur, I don't think we need to worry too much about him. On DraftKings, there's a lot to like here. I think Wiggins is more of a tournament guy, but a bunch of guys I like for cash. Sterling Brown, the Muppet, Taj, Brogo, Jeffy T, Chrissy Middleton, Jimmy Butler, Townsie's at 8.7. That is stupendous. And Yanni at 10.4. Of course, I still like Yanni on FanDuel. I didn't mention him. Can't believe I forgot him. I like Antetokounmpo on FanDuel as well. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Rockets. It's the Spurs. We don't know about Chris Paul. We don't know about Eric Gordon. Of course, the absences of one or two of those guys changes things up a lot. If both of those guys are out, you're all about Jim Harden. You're all about Gerald Green. And you give a boost to Luke Marmute and Ryan Anderson and Clint Capella. If Paul is out, then Gordon gets a bump. If Gordon is out, then Paul has some value. But we have to remember, of course, that this team is playing the Spurs, a team that absolutely restricts opposition output pretty much every time that teams go against them. So that is a level of concern there. At point guard, Chrissy Paul's at 97. I probably wouldn't use him, although he has done well against the Spurs in the past. If he's ready to go, it'd be a tournament only. Tone Park is not of interest. DeJounte Murray at 6,300. I think that's probably pushing it too much. That is a little bit too high for DeJounte. Shooting guards, Brittany Forbes, minimum salary, Manu, no, Dan Green, not really, Eric Gordon, 54. If Gordon plays and Paul is out, we should be all about Gordon. He killed us last game with 0 points in 10 minutes, but that's a weird scenario that will scare some people off, but if he is ready to go, then I would be ready to get back on that because that low ownership will work in your favor. And Jim Harden only had 99 points in the last game, 11,500 for Jimmy. Fine to use, even better to use if Paul is out. The Spurs should worry you a bit, but he does average 51 the last three times, so it's not like it's a complete shutdown and Kawhi is not around. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 58. I don't love that. PJ Tucker, Gerald Green at 45. Of course, if those two blokes are out, as I mentioned, Chrissy Paul and Eric Gordon, then we're all about Jezza. LaMarcus Aldridge at 89. I am very interested in LaMarcus Aldridge at 89. A strong cash type anchor, I think. While Marmute at 39, that's got really good GPP upside with Trevor Ariza sidelined. Ryan Anderson's at 3,700 because he's bad. He is a GPP guy only if Paul and Gordon sit out. At center, I like Clint at 6,700. It's a difficult matchup, but it can be improved for him with those guys out. It does open things up for him. He had 31 in his last game. But there is, 42 in his last game and has a 28-point average against the Spurs. So it's not like they completely reduce his value. I like him. While Pau at 64, I'd spend the 300 extra and take Clint. Not really feeling too much goodness about Pau there, despite how well he has played. On DraftKings, Harden at 11-4 is strong, of course. Aldridge at 77, I love. And Capella at 68, also in a good spot. DeJounte Murray, more favorable at 59. Still not feeling him as an awesome option. And the same sort of stuff. If we have the absences of Paul or Gordon, we're looking at Gerald Green. We're looking at Ryan Anderson and Luke Marmute as some tournament-type guys. The last game of the day, it's the Thunder. It's the Nuggets. I don't think we've got any injuries to talk about in this one. We know Mason Plumlee is out, so it's good to have that news initially. I don't know if the Nuggets are going to go start Darrell Arthur again. I don't know if Ken Faried is going to play. I don't know if Baby Neck is going to play or if they want to play more Torrey Craig. So they're things that we don't have to pay massive amounts of attention to, though. They're not huge DFS turning points. At point guard, Russell Westbrook at 12,300. I think that's almost too high on a 5-game slate to use for cash, unless a lot of value opens up, say, in Memphis. 12-3 is pretty high, more tournament, but a tough one in cash, even though the matchup's really good. While the Blue Arrows at 6,800. I think Murray, if it was a higher than 5-game slate, I think I'd be off him, but I am interested in using him here, given the matchup. Fat Face Ray Felton, Manny Moutier, very little interest. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris. Like it a lot, 6,600. Almost pencil him in for 30 every time, so he's got upside and floor. Farton Will Barton at 66, definitely a lower floor, more of a tournament guy, but I don't really love him. While Terry Ferguson shouldn't be on your radar. At small forward, Paulie George at 8,200, maybe just a little bit too high there for Paulie. He's got to get you 40 or 43, and I'm not quite sure that that's going to happen. Baby Neck, we're fading. Houston's Torrey Craig, no interest. Power forward, Trey Lyles, 58. Disappointed that he didn't get more minutes in that last game. More of a tournament guy than a cash-looking guy. While Mello at 62, I do think that is... I think that's pretty good, actually, in this matchup against Denver. You're looking at 35-ish, I think, as a realistic expectation for Mello, and that breaks that value pretty nicely. At center, actually, Darrell Arthur, 3,600, had 22 in that last game. If he starts, there's some tournament upside there, but that's really about it. Jokic is at 9,500. Bad matchup against Adams. I will fade Jokic here, whereas Steve-O at 7,000. I think that Adams can be used there. Probably limited GPP upside, but not a bad cash play. I'm not really looking at anyone else at center because there is no Mason Plumlee. On DraftKings, a lot of guys I like for cash. Mello, Gaz Harris, Steve Adams, Farton Will Barton, Blue Arrow, all those guys with the exception of Adams are under 6,000, which just seems stupidly cheap. Paulie George at 7,500, Nick Jokic at 81, and Westbrook at 11,300. All of those guys, this is a very stackable game on DraftKings. Tons of value in all of those players. All right, let's now go and have a look at the other DFS sites to see what we can break down out of that. On Yahoo, tournaments, Jokic, Townsie, Jonas Valanciunas, Oubre, Dan Green. And they're the tournament-only type guys. For cash and tournaments, Jarrell Martin, Tone Parker, probably more just cash, Dylan Brooks, Sterling Brown, Marmute, Kennard, Ginobili, Andy Harrison, Reggie Bullock, Satoransky, The Muppet, Stan Johnson, Markieff Morris, Malcolm Brogdon, and Mark Gasol. On Moneyball for tournaments, Westbrook, Towns, DeRozan, Farton, Will Barton, Wiggins, Satoransky, Kennard. And we look at the cash guys, Sterling Brown, Reggie Bullock, Gortat, Stan Johnson, Taj Gibson, Markieff Morris, Brogdon, Teague, Middleton, Brad Beal, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Jim Butler. And to wrap it up, on Draft Stars for tournaments, Westbrook, Jokic, Towns, Barton, Oubre, Dan Green, Gortat, Seldon, Darrell Arthur. And for cash, we've got Sterling Brown, Luke Kennard, Satoransky, Bullock, Murray, DeJounte Murray, Jeff Teague, Malcolm Brogdon, Jamal Murray, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Jim Butler. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review. It's a great way of supporting the show. And of course, check out our sponsor, mybookie.ag, and use that promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% match deposit bonus. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On Grizzlies for the Tyreek Evans news, Locked On Bulls for the Nikola Mirotic news, Locked On Suns for the Greggy Munro buyout news, and all the other teams that they're rumored to be going to, the Locked On Pelicans, Locked On Celtics, Locked On Jazz, for all these teams who are in the mix for those players and see how they discuss it. You can find this podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, and Stitcher, and on YouTube, where you can leave a thumbs up, a subscription, and leave a comment. I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_Beeble. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Michael Beasley.